Hard-hitting news. Alternative talk radio. Get ready, America, for Deadline Live with your host, Jack Blood. Deadline Live is a weekly wrap-up for those too busy in the daily grind to discern and dissect the news. While the so-called mainstream media buries the truth, Jack Blood uncovers it, exposing the lies that our trusted government officials do not want us to know. And now, honk your horns, America, and please welcome Jack Blood.
Welcome, welcome to this Monday edition of Deadline Live. It is the 23rd of August, 2004. Welcome to the broadcast. My name is Jack Blood. I'm your narrator, as always, here for the next 2 hours for your edification, and here Monday through Friday on Republic Broadcasting Network from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Central Time. A ton of news to cover today. Three Kirksville men under FBI surveillance at St. Louis. The FBI is running roughshod now over our rights against people's possible protest plans. In other words, thought crimes. They might be thinking about going to one of the conventions, and this being the Republican convention coming up next week, where we will be attending. So raids and doors are being kicked in across America to head this off, any potential thought criminals out there planning on protesting the RNC in New York. Well, I guess you can expect a little knock on your door. Same thing going on in Moscow. Police raids rights group as a row over the brutality in Russia is growing. Russia is now expediting their police state, unabated, of course, in the United Nations or the United States or from anybody, really. A man was fired from his job for heckling George W. Bush. He was fired from his $35,000 a year job as a graphic designer because he heckled George W. Bush during a West Virginia rally. New overtime rules are mostly bad news for employees. Car tracking device trades privacy for dollars. All of these headlines, by the way, are on jackblood.com. Ted Kennedy, as you've heard, on the no-fly terror list. It took him a while, but I believe he has now found himself off that list. Now, that, of course, begs the question if people like Kennedy are getting on the no-fly list and getting harassed by the Justice Department and the Homeland Security Gestapo, then what does that say for us? Also, Israel, a human trafficking haven, and Anand's Congo burden deja vu. Before the United Nations Security Council approves Kofi Annan's plan to make the Congo UN's largest and costliest mission in the world, the diplomatic do-gooder should spend a few minutes studying the UN's previous largest and costliest missions in the world, that being the same Congo 44 years ago. And witnesses saying the death toll in Florida, 400. Why are they covering that up? But we have something else. Eustace Mullins coming in with us live. Stay tuned, folks.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
You're free, and freedom is beautiful. And, you know, it'll take time to restore chaos and order, but we will.
Hey! Disorder in the house. The tub's running over. Plaster falling down in pieces by the couch of pain. Disorder in the house. Time to duck and cover. Helicopters hover over rough terrain.
Yes, folks. Disorder out of chaos. That's pretty much what we've got here. Yeah, thank you for joining me today. I'm Jack Blood, your narrator here for the next 2 hours. As I ran through all of those news stories, my point is, before I ran out of time into that commercial break, was to let you know we're not going to talk about all of the breaking news. There's obviously plenty of avenues and forums in which you to get that information. Today we have something very, very special for you. Our special guest, staying with us for approximately, about 2 hours here today. In fact, the entire program is none other than Eustace Mullins. If you're not familiar with Mr. Mullins, he's written a book many, many years ago called Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and he's a veteran of the United States Air Force with 38 months of active service during World War II. He's from Virginia. He was educated at Washington Lee Universities. His original book was published under the title Mullins on the Federal Reserve. It was commissioned by the poet Ezra Pound in 1948. Ezra Pound was a political prisoner for 13 and a half years at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Washington, D.C. It's a federal institution for the insane. And this is largely because he had criticized the Federal Reserve. The research at the Library of Congress was directed and reviewed daily by also another contributor, George Stimson. He's founder of the National Press Club in Washington and also had worked with Eustace Mullins to expose the Federal Reserve. Well, here to talk about that and to speak with you folks, I think this is quite a privilege for us, is none other than Eustace Mullins. Eustace, thank you for coming on the program today.
Oh, I'm glad to be with you.
And it's a pleasure to be with you as well. A lot of the information we have today about the Federal Reserve is due to your great research.
Well, I'm the only one that did the research. I did all of my research at the Library of Congress from official government documents, so nobody's ever able to challenge anything I ever wrote.
And I think that that's something that we wanted to make clear because there are a number of books about the subject now. Thankfully, thanks to all of your great research, this is incorporated into any number of books about the New World Order and about a lot of the problems we have here with the New World Order systems and the globalists. So we all owe you some gratitude anyway, Eustace, for putting this all together. And from
the
heart.
Credit goes to Ezra.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that because, you know, I used to be a consumer of literature. He was always one of my favorite poets and authors, and I was surprised years ago when I found out that he was leading the charge against the Federal Reserve once I came to the understanding about what the Federal Reserve was. How did this all start with Ezra Pound?
Well, he devoted his life to that. You see, a lot of his young friends who were writers and artists were killed in World War One, and World War I ended, Ezra couldn't figure out any reason why his friends died. And that started a research of 30 years, and he turned that 30 years research over to me later. And so that's where I took off.
So this was primarily due to he was investigating and trying to come to an understanding about, you know, war and why wars were fought. And this led, of course, following the money trail to the international bankers and the Federal Reserve.
Oh, yes, indeed. It led him right to the banks. And that's where he stayed the rest of his life.
Well,
me too.
Where do you think the best place to start with this is? Let's go ahead and consider that we have listeners right now who have no idea what this is, and let's paint the picture from beginning to end with you, Eustace. Where does this all begin? As far as, let's give it a timeline here. Where does the Federal Reserve, the central bank in America, whether it be the precursor to the Federal Reserve or the Federal Reserve itself, where does this begin and how?
Well, it's actually quite new. The Federal Reserve Act was passed at Christmas in 1913 and didn't go into effect till the following year, 1914. So the Federal Reserve, people think, has been around for many years. In many of my lectures, people say to me, well, if you want to get rid of the Federal Reserve, well, what do you replace it with? And I always tell them, my answer is the same. I say, well, what would you replace the mafia with?
What do you replace it what with? I missed
that. The mafia.
Okay.
Because it's the same type of organization.
Yeah. Good point. So what do you replace the mafia with? Smarter crooks in better suits, I guess.
That's right. Better crooks.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, and we know that Thomas Jefferson had warned us about central banks, that as soon as we let central banks get in here, that we were pretty much selling out the future of our children, that we would become slaves. He was pretty much dead on, wasn't he?
Well, he was right on target with the banks, and he was on target with the judges. He said repeatedly in his last years that the judges were the biggest threat to America. And I think anybody would agree with that today.
Let's do a quick overview, if we could, in your own words, here with Eustace Mullins, folks. In your own words, what is the Federal Reserve System? Let's cover that.
Well, I've lectured on this for 50 years. It is not federal, and it has no reserves. And it's not a system, it's actually a criminal syndicate, which was originated in an atmosphere of criminal conspiracy at Jekyll Island, Georgia, by the richest men in the world.
and you've covered this, you've written several books on this, the World Order, The Curse of Canaan, and, of course, the book we're talking about today, Secrets of the Federal Reserve.
I'm dealing with the same gang all the time, so it's the same people. That's all I write about.
It seems like everything goes back. Well, you know, you hear this term a lot today, Eustace, you know, follow the money. And you want to find out where terrorism is coming from. You want to find out, you know, where crime is coming from. And this is the thing, and this is what so-called Patriot Act is supposed to do. Of course, we know it's being turned around on us now. But
you know,
follow the money, and then you always...
Yeah, terrorists have to have money. No terrorist can go around terrorizing the world unless they have a good bank account.
Yeah. Well, and as you'd said earlier, that the Congress had passed the Federal Reserve Act in September 23rd, 1913. Did the congressmen know that they were creating a central bank?
Well, Congressman Charles Lindbergh's father, led the fight against the Federal Reserve System. And for that, he was hounded out of Congress and never held office again in his life.
This is another victim of the Federal Reserve.
Another victim. And his son, Charles Lindbergh Jr., the world's most famous person, never dared to mention the Federal Reserve in his entire life.
Well, it's a monopoly of banks. Let's talk about how this bill was passed, because there were some shenanigans. People were duped and bribed and intimidated.
Paul Warburg, the most influential banker in the country, came down to Washington for the first time in his life from Wall Street and personally lobbied this act through Congress.
And who was that again?
Paul Warburg.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I wanted to make sure that that went through the airwaves because I was talking over you there.
Yeah, the Warburgs are still a very big family in this country.
So the Warburgs were at the tip of this, and that this was their interest. Who were the Warburgs working for, in your opinion?
For the House of Rothschild. The Warburg brothers, Max and Paul, were trained in the House of Rothschild in Europe.
That's, I think, something that we need to say. In fact, we can trace the Carnegies back to the Rothschilds.
Everything goes back to the... Now, the Carnegie, interestingly enough, he put all his money in his Carnegie foundations, but he didn't want to have anything to do with it, so he stood aside from it, and so the Rockefellers took it over. So the Carnegie foundations today are owned by the Rockefellers.
And same with the Morgan Trust, the Morgan Foundation.
The
Mellon Foundation, these people are...
They all work together.
And it's a pretty slick thing. If people don't understand how these foundations work, this is, of course, one way. I believe that Howard Hughes was kind of the innovator of this, was he not, where he puts all of his money in a trust in this foundation for philanthropic purposes, let's say. And that
New England family, the Peabody's, originated public philanthropy.
And this helps keep all of their money off the books so that they don't look as rich as they actually are. I mean, when you
they don't flaunt their money at all.
When you see the Forbes 500 list and you see, you know, the actions of guys like Soros and Buffett and Bill Gates, you never see people like the Queen of England or the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers in there.
No, never. They're all Johnny Come Latelys. And these are contemporary fortunes which have been made overnight in real estate. And Microsoft with Bill Gates and so forth. But they never talk about anybody who started before 1900.
You know, one of the things I want to do with you today, Eustace, is I want to give you as much of a chance to talk as possible. This is a good instance where I kind of need to get out of the way. So I'm going to go ahead and give you the authorization to monopolize the program today and talk as long as you like on any of the subjects that I bring up. Go ahead and give up a full history, make any connections that you want to make. I mean, I'm going to give you the floor, and I don't want people to sit and listen to me talk most of the show. I want them to hear you talk, okay?
Oh, you know, so many talk shows that I've been on, the host does all the talking, does let me talk. Chuck Carter used to do that all the time.
Well, I do it myself. That's why I'm warning myself to stay out of your way a little bit today and just let you talk about it.
Well, with most of your guests, you have to do most of the talking because they haven't got anything to talk about.
That's right. Well, this is a long, sordid historical story, folks, that is completely documented up and down, and I want to, again, give Mr. Mullins a chance to do that. So when this was initially ratified, what a lot of people talk about was the Federal Reserve Act was illegally ratified. Can you expound on that?
Well, essentially, from a legal standpoint, it's an illegal delegation of power by the U.S. Congress. Our Constitution was written that Congress should have control of the money. And then that was unconstitutionally delegated by Congress in 1913.
But one of the, I think one of the loopholes I hear, and I heard this on one of our own programs, is that Congress has the ability to mint money. And so therefore they say, well, it's okay for anyone else to do it. But I don't see that in the Constitution. It says only Congress has the ability to mint money.
Put that in there for a specific reason. They wanted Congress to keep control of money because money has brought down a lot of empires before this.
We're going to cover that when we come back. Stay with us. Eustace Mullins, folks. Stay tuned.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
The abuse of prisoners, the torture of prisoners, degrading treatment of people in the custody of coalition forces. Those things are completely and totally acceptable.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way.
Yeah, folks. Well, with age comes wisdom. And yeah, when we're younger, we don't feel like we need anybody's help. And certainly the older we get, the wiser we get, the more we understand how much we got to stick together through this thing, especially when we realize that the enemy has this octopus and these tentacles which grow around our throats and tighten around our throats on a regular basis. So yeah, we do need to help each other, folks. With me today, I'm very privileged to have the one and only Eustace Mullins. We are talking about, his body of work, and most specifically his book, which is called Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and by Eustace Mullins. And we will be giving out phone numbers today where you can get this very hard-to-find book, folks. I hope that you give that a call and that you put this into your library, because this is the original source. And before we bring Eustace Mullins back up, I want to relay this quote to you. This was said by Franklin Delano Roosevelt to Colonel Mandel House, and many of you know who he was. And FDR said to Colonel House, quote, "The real truth of the matter is, as you and I know, that a financial element in large centers has owned the government of the United States since the days of Andrew Jackson." And, of course, history points out to the last truly honorable and incorruptible American president as Old Hickory. Eustace Mullins, thank you for joining me today. What do you think about that quote from FDR?
Oh, that's very illuminating. I'm surprised. It's awfully frank. I really wonder if he actually ever said that.
He kind of played both sides of the coin, didn't he, that being FDR?
Well, he did, yeah. FDR was a very weak character. You know, his grandfather was the most famous drug dealer in Hong Kong. And the Delano fortune, the Roosevelts had no money, and the Delano fortune came from his mother, Sarah Delano, who was the daughter of Frederick Delano, who was the leading opium dealer.
So just like the Russells, just like the Bronfmans, just like the Kennedys, these guys made all their money selling drugs.
Well, the reason that FDR provoked the Vietnam War was that they were fighting for the Golden Triangle. His family was trying to get their territory back. And that had nothing to do with communism at all.
And where do you base that on? What facts do you base that on?
My research. It's all in there. Well, this will tell you, tip off the whole thing. Franklin D. Roosevelt, every morning, had special communiques from Ho Chi Minh in Indochina put on his personal desk. This was the most important communique of any operative that he had, and he wanted to read those first before he read anything else.
So he was very concerned with getting the family fortunes, or at least probably working with a number of key globalists to secure that exclusive territory, that being the Golden Triangle, as you say. It's just very much like today, securing after.
It hasn't changed at all. And the CIA, as we know it today, was created by the Vietnamese War. They went into the drug business in a big way in the Vietnamese War.
So in your mind, the CIA are nothing more than high-level drug dealers?
Oh, yeah. So they're, you know, Lyndon LaRouche calls Queen Elizabeth the leading drug dealer of the world, and she's not really at all, but she's in that tradition, you see.
Well, Lyndon LaRouche also is bragging that he's the new FDR president, so I don't, maybe.
He's still promoting FDR. He doesn't even know FDR is dead.
Yeah, right. One of the things, we're talking about the Federal Reserve primarily today, but we'll also be talking about the New World Order, and folks, we'll take your calls. I'll let you know when the go button is. Because this is a fascinating gentleman who can answer just about any question you have about the New World Order, and it's a great resource. The preface for the Federal Reserve Act reads, an act to provide for the establishment of Federal Reserve banks to furnish an elastic currency to afford means of rediscounting commercial papers to establish a more effective supervision of banking in the United States and for other purposes. Let me ask you, first of all, what do they mean by other purposes?
Well, other purposes are anything that they want to get into, they'll have the money to do it.
I mean, that's pretty vague to put in the Federal Reserve Act.
But an elastic currency is the key to the whole Federal Reserve Act.
I was going to ask you that.
Because what it did was to, elastic currency means a rubber check. You can stretch it to ad infinitum. And the whole idea of the Federal Reserve Act was to give the bankers a currency that they can manipulate and stretch as far as they wanted to use it.
Yeah. Well, and this goes back to Paul Warburg, because I guess that was one of his little pet projects.
Paul Warburg was the chairman of the International Acceptance Corporation, and he was the acceptance king of the world, and acceptances were four-name paper, and that's where the big money was. See, this country was founded on one-name paper. I mean, I borrowed $10 from you and gave you a note from me for $10. That's one-name paper. And that's the way this business was, this country was run until 1913, when the gamblers like Paul Warburg took it over.
This
country has been run by gamblers ever since.
Just like Soros and Buffett, speculators.
Soros and Buffett are the typical of the heirs of Paul Warburg.
Stay with me. Eustace Mullis, folks. Jack Blood will be right back after this short break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
History repeats itself, going down to the future. When it's 1 second to 12, the hands touch.
All right, folks, welcome back to the program. I'm Jack Blood, your narrator. You're listening to Deadline Live on Republic Broadcasting Network. With me today is none other than Eustace Mullins. Mayor Amschel Bauer, or Rothschild as he later became, had once said, "Give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes the laws." And when we're talking about a shadow government, folks, whether it be working under FEMA or working with whoever, the shadow government, who we've actually heard quoted in George Bush's speech. That's okay, folks. Don't worry. The terrorists have hit us, but the shadow government is standing by. When we're talking about the shadow government, we are talking about these international bankers. We are talking about these people that control the money. So he was exactly right. Eustace Mullins, give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes the laws.
Well, that's true, because when you pay the legislators, they'll pass any bill you want.
That's right. Well, I mean, and we're paying them, but we're not paying them enough, I guess.
No.
I know that we're paying. I've done the math here to figure out that we're paying the Federal Reserve interest upwards to $1 billion a day in interest.
Well, you know, every legislator in Washington who voted against the Federal Reserve System was run out of Washington, and every legislator who helped to pass the act had a very prosperous career ever after. They became the leading judges and the leading legislators in Washington ever since.
Well, let's talk about you, Eustace Mullins. I mean, what have you gotten for your trouble to expose this scam to the American people and people of the world? You've been hounded and prosecuted your entire life.
Well, I'm the only person who's ever been fired for political reasons from the staff of the Library of Congress. It's a very non-political group of people there. And I'm the only one that's ever been fired. And when I was fired in 1952, there were a couple of black people worked in the stacks of the Library of Congress. They were the only ones who stuck their necks out and protested my being fired.
And you've also endured a number of other injustices. Your phones, I know, have been messed with even recently. You're having trouble keeping phone service.
Year, I can hardly talk to anybody on the telephone.
You know, and you're in your 80s, so obviously, I mean, they're afraid of you. I mean, this has been a lifetime of a persecution, though, for you and those like you who expose this.
Well, yes, and I got Ezra Pound free from St. Elizabeth after 13 and a half years without trial, and so they hate me for that because they were the chief politicos in Washington were boasting to George Simpson in 1948 that Pound would never be released in his lifetime. And I got him about 10 years later.
That's amazing. He's one of those artists that, you know, in their lifetime, they become acknowledged and very successful. Usually it's after an artist passes away, a poet or somebody writing literature like Ezra Pound. But he was famous in his lifetime. And for him to have been treated in such a manner was really something exceptional.
Well, I'm his last living protege, and four of his proteges were awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature, and no other writer has ever had a single protege awarded the Nobel Prize, and he had four.
Well, he was really quite a man in all
respects. He was a teacher, really. In fact, his work with me, he was a teacher. Ezra Pound, I've told my audience this for many years, that I got my education in insane asylum. Because I got 3 years of education with daily visits to Ezra Pound at St. Elizabeth's Hospital for the Insane in Washington, D.C.
Well, I mean, you know what they say in the world of doublethink and doublespeak. I mean, the insane asylums sometimes are the most sane places, you know. I mean, that's really true. The insane are actually sane. It's the rest of us out here that are in the madhouse, this illusion that we call reality. I want to open up the phone line so that you all have a chance, and I know we're going to get a lot of calls here. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to talk
to I'm sure glad to
one of the greatest experts about the New World Order and Federal Reserve, folks. You're going to want to try to get in any question you can. I'm going to open up the lines now, 800-313-9443. Any questions you have regarding the Federal Reserve or fiat currency or fractional reserve banking or the New World Order in general, we will take those calls, 800-313-9443. You have very interesting artwork, I understand, on the cover of the book, which we are going to make available here today, Secrets of the Federal Reserve. Do you want to explain the symbolism on the cover of the book?
Well, it shows the House of Rothschild, really, and the coat of arms of the Rothschild family, and that's where it all goes back to.
And the red shield with the five golden arrows held in the
eagle. Yeah, those are the five sons who established the hegemony over Europe. The five sons became the five rulers of Europe.
And do you have an understanding of why they changed their name from Bauer to Rothschild, the Red Shield?
They had a red shield which advertised their shop, and that's how everybody went to the house of the Red Shield. And so they just took the name Rothschild after a few years because everybody thought they must be Red Shield was their name.
I mean, there's always something fishy with people that change their names, such as Saxe Coburg Gotha becoming Windsors, you know, the Windsor family.
Well, Bauer, the Rothschild family, the name Bauer meant peasant anyway, and they certainly were not peasants.
And the bulk of the money, to my understanding, of the Rothschild family came in through the Napoleonic Wars, most particularly where Wellington fought Napoleon, and they had, to my understanding, beaten the information back to England and had pretty much led people to believe that Napoleon had won that war with Wellington.
Oh, yes, they put out the propaganda that Napoleon had won and that this was really Waterloo. This was the end of the English Empire. So the Bank of England stock just dropped to nothing in a couple of hours, and the Rothschild bought up most of the stock of the Bank of England.
And then when the truth came in that Wellington had actually won the battle at Waterloo, of course, they had a windfall, and that was really the the bulk of the fortunes that came in for Nathan Rothschild.
Oh, it certainly was. Nathan Rothschild, he became the King of England after Battle of Waterloo.
You know, a lot of people will say that when you refer to the crown, you're referring to the Bank of England. That Bank of England still today is controlled by the Rothschild banking family.
Yeah, well, the original stock of the Bank of England was bought by the Dukes of England. It was owned by the royal family and the principal dukes. So it was an aristocratic bank all the way.
But that all changed with the Rothschilds.
Yes, they really took it over.
So this was a pretty effective way to take down the royals. I know that the Illuminati and Adam Weisskopf were very interested in transferring power out of the hands of the royals and into the private industrialists, I guess we'll call them. And in order to keep control of things, they at that time were killing off kings and queens in order to control them, and it was a rather problematic venture for them, whereas if they could change the world into a democracy, Eustace, they could easily get rid of people within a few years if they had a problem with them.
Well, the Windsors are the only royal family that has survived since 1900.
Well, you also have, of course, Queen Beatrix and the Habsburgs and, and others.
They're all related. They're cousins and so forth.
Okay. Well, I have a number of questions for you, and I'll sneak in my questions, Eustace, but we want to let the listeners have the privilege and the honor of speaking with you and asking you whatever is on their mind. New World Order stuff, folks, banking stuff, the Federal Reserve, how we got into this mess. Here is a very wise gentleman who can answer these questions for you. 800-313-9443. First up is Ed in Pennsylvania. Ed, thank you for holding. A question for Eustace Mullins, please.
Hey, hi, Jack. Great show today.
Thanks.
Hi, Eustace. This is Ed from Pennsylvania. I wrote you a letter, and you sent me a gift package.
Oh yes,
of all your books, and I read all of them. I know you have one, The New World Order. I know that's not in print anymore.
I've reprinted it in a couple of months.
Oh, okay.
Because people are really demanding that book.
Yeah, I did get Death by Injection, which was a great book also. But I wanted to ask you, how did you get that whole, getting the job at the Library of Congress? And I know that in the book, Right of Martyr, he said about I think he just explained that you were fired from that job.
Well, I was personally hired by the Library of Congress, Luther Evans. He personally hired me because I was going to an art school in Washington, D.C., at which he gave the principal speech at the graduation. And afterwards, he asked me to come to work at the library. And then Senator Herbert Lehman, the national chairman of the Anti-Defamation League of his name, Brith, called him up and told him to fire me because I was writing for a publication in England called The Social Creditor. And
right,
the Social Creditor. So Lehman had Evans fire me, and so I sued the government on that, but it was dismissed without a hearing.
Yeah, well, didn't you have a letter that said that Aryan on it or something? Or it had a letterhead that said Aryan, and everyone kind of got...
Oh, Aryan League of America, yeah. That was just a letterhead, which Ezra Pound suggested that. You see, he was in touch with a lot of people in India who called themselves Aryans, and I decided... Use the letterhead, Aryan League of America, because it didn't refer to Aryans as people think of today as Nazis,
right.
But it referred to people in India, Indian sages. But people didn't know that, so they fired me.
Well, Eustace, I enjoy your books, and I look forward to the rest of the interview with Jack. Jack, really enjoy your show.
Hey, thanks so much, Ed. And I want to give out the number, because we're going to make Eustace Mullins' books available on the RBN store. Folks, we've gone on out of our way. This is another edition. Right now we're carrying George Humphrey's video about 9/11. We're going to carry Eustace Mullins' books here. And any other major resource that we fill is going to be a must-have addition to your libraries or to your DVD collections. And I'm proud to be able to offer Eustace Mullins' books. And you can get them by calling 800-724-2719. And specifically, we are going to make available today the book that we're talking about in question, which is The Secrets of the Federal Reserve. And then we'll discuss bringing a catalog in for you and Eustace offering any number of books that you still have in print and available on our website at rbnlive.com. But if you want to get these books, Call in 800-724-2719, 800-724-2719, and you'll not only get this great book and support further work of Eustace Mullins, but you'll also be supporting this network. So it's a no-lose proposition. Bill is up in Texas on a cell phone. Bill, thank you for holding. A question for Eustace Mullins.
I'm grateful, Jack. First off, I'd like to congratulate you on discovering Warren Zevon's awesome parting shot disorder in the house.
Really?
As an aside to that, a previous album, he had a song that he wrote and recorded before the September 11th event back in 2001 that was called I Was in the House When the House Burned Down, which you might like also to add to your repertoire. It's my humble opinion that you have the best program going on the radio today.
Wow, thank you so much.
Bar none.
I appreciate it.
You breathe new life into the talk radio scene. Really, that has been going down since the days of Tom Donahue back in the mid-90s.
Well, that means a lot to me. Thank you, Bill.
Mr. Mullins, I am grateful that you're still with us. I've read several of your books. Every one that I've ever had, I've lent out and never received and received it back. So hopefully they're making the rounds.
Well, they are, but you mentioned Tom Donahue. I used to be on his program quite a lot in Jacksonville. I helped Tom set up his show, and Tom is still in trouble on account of that.
Well, I remember well when you were on his show. In fact, I did have a chance to meet you when you came to the Citizens for Legal Reform in Dallas, Texas. That
Al Cap
used to put on. But just to, you
those
know,
those are great days.
Say, if you'd be so kind to try to tie in who the Syrians were and possibly still are, and also who the children of AI are, and if you might discuss how they may, in fact, be tied in with the B'nai B'rith organization. And with that, I'm going to hang up and listen because I'm on the cell phone with limited minutes.
All right,
and I'm grateful to you for coming on, sir.
Thank you. I know those are complicated questions. Do you want to go ahead and handle those, Eustace?
I don't know what AIR is.
Aeon?
AIR.
Children of Aeon.
Children of Aeon. I don't know what that is.
The Syrian. Who the Syrians really were.
Oh, who the Syrians were.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that goes back into ancient history. It's kind of hard to trace those tribes back then. See, they were the Edomites, and the Turkish Edomites are the ones who caused all the trouble. And from them are descended this Khazars, which caused all the trouble today. And but that's the best way to trace them right back is through the Turco-Edomites.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things we can do. One is we could trace these people's bloodlines and lineage back. They like to brag about that quite a bit. In fact, we're seeing mainstream news right now bragging about the royalty, the blue blood of John Kerry and George W. Bush. And supposedly John Kerry has more blue blood than Bush and therefore will be elected president. So these are some of the things that we can use to trace these people back. And I think it's pretty important.
Well, it is important, but... I haven't read much about that situation in the past 2 years, but in my book, The World Order, I trace the Venetians, and that who were the ancient Phoenicians, and through them, as the bloodlines are traced right down to the present time.
What do you think, Eustace? I mean, there's a lot of books coming out now. There's new radio programs like mine. The infrastructure is growing. People are waking up. I know that you felt pretty lonely, I'm sure, when you started doing this research many years ago, decades ago. How do you feel sitting and watching all of this great infrastructure growing up to get out the truth?
Well, the whole jigsaw puzzle is falling into place right in front of my eyes. I've been writing about the same people for 50 years. And so I don't have to do any research anymore because I know all of their backgrounds.
Yeah.
And it's the same crowd. It's the same insular, inbred crowd that we've had for the last 100 years in this country.
But my question specifically is, does it give you some satisfaction that you have some company, that people have taken up your mantle and continued your work, and that, you know, again, this is such a growing infrastructure, that being the truth movement?
Well, it's very satisfying to... And my books are in such demand. You know, my books are selling, used copies of my books are selling for $150 and $250 a piece on the Internet today, which is something I never expected to see. Well, so it is kind of nice to see.
And
we're
going to be selling your book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, for $20, folks. These are hard to get. And again, the number is 800-724-2719. Just to let people know, your shortwave will change for the second hour, 13.570. That's 13.570. The lines are open, 800-313-9443. If you have a question for Eustace Mullins, who will be with us for the next hour, don't forget, Andrew Jackson, 1833, to the shadow banking moguls. You are a den of thieves, vipers. I intend to rout you out, and by eternal God, I will rout you out.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
What I said yesterday, I don't know what I said, but I know what I think. And I assume it's what I said.
Some other thought is thinking this life stands above the hound bells on the ground. Illumination visited upon the whole land. Unmarked helicopters hovering. The Lord is coming soon. Here comes the supercopter, here comes the noise it makes. The demon was an idea, the demon is awake. Well, scratch mark left across the surface of your mind. This hour now upon us, the hour is now arrived. Unmarked helicopters.
Yes, folks, a fan favorite, Unmarked Helicopters. And people ask who does that song. It's called Soul Coughing. Just like it sounds, Soul Coughing, that's off the X-Files soundtrack. If you want to acquire that. Here with me today is Dr. Eustace Mullins. And this is, there's a number of great quotes out there by government types and opinion makers. I tried to read one in before the break, Andrew Jackson warning the shadow banking moguls that, you know, you're a den of thieves and vipers, and I intend to rout you out, and by eternal God, I will rout you out. Andrew Jackson, Thomas Jefferson, certainly names that we know that have stood against central banking. Dr. Carol Quigley, who wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope, and we know this is a great manual to decode the New World Order. He likes to brag about it, and this is, of course, Bill Clinton's mentor, a history teacher and professor at Georgetown University. And he said, the history of the last century shows that the advice given to governments by bankers was consistently good for bankers, but was often disastrous. That is disastrous for governments, businessmen, and the people. And that's pretty much right on. Also, you know, Andrew Jackson went on to say, if Congress has the right under the Constitution to issue paper money, it was given to them to use by themselves, not to be delegated to individuals or corporations, which is exactly what's happened. We have a lot of people on the record, Eustace, who have warned us about this central banking establishment.
Oh, yes. Well, Andrew Jackson is always, when they list the 10 worst presidents of the United States, they always list Andrew Jackson as number one, because he fought the bankers.
And Jeff from Texas that just dropped off, I wanted to get you in, so call up and I'll try to get you up ahead of the line. We do have a full boat of phones we're going to go to here in the second hour. Before we do that, I wanted to give out the number again for people to be able to get your great book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve. We are standing by the phones right now to take your orders at 800-724-2719. 800-724-2719. Let's get those phones ringing, folks, and get your copy of this book, which is vitally important to your library and to your research, and supports a good cause, both Eustace Mullins' work and the work here at Republic Broadcasting Network. We got Kenny up from Ohio. We can squeeze him in before the break. Kenny, thank you for holding. A question for Eustace Mullins.
Yeah, I just want to thank him for all his efforts over throughout the years. He's really done quite a job. He's always been one of my favorite guests on the show, and I wanted to ask him. I've kind of formatted my life around, you know, everything that you hear on the shortwave broadcast and particularly the, you know, for lack of a better word, stockpiling of gold, silver, and you know, different numismatics and whatnot. And there's always been a gloom and doom forecast that eventually there would come a time when they're going to pull the plug on us, or pull the plug on the economy. And I wanted to ask him today, does he foresee that? And does he?
I'm going to hold you over, Kenny, so that we can elaborate on that. Folks, stay tuned. Second hour coming up. 13.570 on your shortwave dial, www.rbnlive.com to log on and listen online. I'm Jack Blood here with Eustace Mullins. This is Deadline Live. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hard-hitting news, alternative talk radio. Get ready, America, for Deadline Live with your host, Jack Blood. Deadline Live is a weekly wrap-up for those too busy in the daily grind to discern and dissect the news. While the so-called mainstream media buries the truth, Jack Blood uncovers it, exposing the lies that our trusted government officials do not want us to know. And now, honk your horns, America, and please welcome Jack Blood.
All right, folks, welcome back for a second hour of Deadline Live. I'm your narrator and radio gun. As always, Jack Blood. The show is Deadline Live, broadcast globally on Republic Broadcasting Network. With me today is Eustace Mullins. We're talking in particular, well, about the New World Order, but about his book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and kind of breaking that down for folks and getting you in here on the phones to be able to pick his brain regarding, you know, the truth and the fiction related to these Federal Reserve issues, because there's a lot of stuff out there, and, well, this is the original source. So you want to go to the, quote, horse's mouth. That's Eustace Mullins, and he knows all about this, folks. And one of the things that before we went to break in the last hour, we were talking about gold, and is gold a good investment? Is the economy going to crash? And one of the things we understand is that Federal Reserve notes, to be worth anything, should be backed by gold. They are not. In fact, it's been said, Eustace, there's no more gold in Fort Knox.
Oh, no. The Federal Reserve dollar is a paper dollar, which is issued against paper bonds. So it's paper all the way.
And Kenny had a question. Kenny, you want to rephrase the question? I mean, are we going to be expecting a currency crash to get into more elastic currency? Is that the question, Kenny? Where are we headed with our economic system now? What can we expect?
Yeah, I guess that would be the question. But to be, you know, more fulfilling of the question, the format of, you know, gold and silver and numismatic saving, you know, as a fail-safe method in the event they do pull the plug, you know, will that indeed redeem us? I mean, aside from food storage, which I'm all over that. But I guess the two questions would be, you know, does he foresee them pulling the plug? Because I know it's like a 70-year cycle and we're a little bit overdue for them to pull the plug on us again. And will, you know, gold, silver, platinum, numismatics, will that redeem us?
Well, the economy itself is based on the production of people, not on the monetary unit. And so, I was asked for many years when I lectured all over the world. The first two questions that were always asked me at the end of my lectures were, when is the crash coming and when are the communists taking over? And this is what people had been conditioned through gloom and doom to expect from the world. And we have a lot more to look forward to than that, I can tell you.
What you're saying, maybe, is that it works a little more covertly than that.
It's more covert. It's not as obvious as it is. In other words, there's not somebody in Washington waiting to pull the plug on the American people tomorrow morning.
They're going to switch us. I believe I'll answer that question. I think that the gold and silver is going to hold its value, in fact, increase in value.
Oh, it will.
And so that is a good investment. And pneumatics, those are good investments, Kenny. I still believe that. And I hope you patronize Best Price Coins, our great sponsor here, when you're picking those up. But, I mean, the bottom line here, Eustace, is that they're switching to an electronic currency. The paper currencies are going to be gone here, and electronic currency is going to be what we're going to have, a number of debits and credits.
Well, that's what they're switching to, and there won't be any money then. It's called the non-money economy, and that's really what it's going to be. credits and debits.
Yeah. Makes it pretty easy to put any number you want on the computer screen, loan people that money at high interest, and laugh all the way to the bank.
Oh, yes. And it really enslaves the people because they become enslaved by the debt that they have.
And then when you expand and contract the debt by war or by famine or by inflation, then you can take the hard assets that people own, their houses, their cars, their businesses, and that will give you real wealth. What do you get for that? How did you get that real wealth? By loaning people fake numbers and a computer screen. Quite a scam, folks. We'll be right back after this.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
Sisters, you got to tell somebody what happened to the USA. One of the things we need to tell people about is the central banking scam, as we discussed before we went into that last break. The other thing are these trade agreements, such as NAFTA, GATT, and, of course, the Free Trade Area of the Americas, which is coming up. And maybe while you're at it, talk about the UN tax, the Law of the Sea Treaty, which gives all international waters to the United Nations for taxing purposes and control purposes. Now, they'll probably say it's for your safety, but we know that security can be supplanted with the word control at any venture. Thus, your social security number is in reality your social control number. And that's a good rule of thumb to use. With us today, Eustace Mullins, who's been very nice to come on here for 2 hours and discuss this with all of us. And I appreciate that, Eustace. I also want to thank none other than Artie Wheeler for setting this whole thing up.
Oh, Artie is a great guy. Artie is one of those guys that I go down in flames when I think about what he suffered at the hands of the government. And he actually plea bargained because he had a crooked lawyer. He plea bargained where he was the victim in the case.
Yeah, well, when they push him, he pushes back. And I guess if more of us were like Artie Wheeler and some of the others that we call our friends here at RBN, we'd be much better off. I want to go ahead and take some more phone calls. Before I do that, I'm going to read this quick quote from Honorable Lewis T. McFadden. He's the chairman, or was the chairman, of Banking and Currency Committee.
Oh, yeah, he's one of my heroes.
And he said this, in quotes, "We have known in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Bank." So that, again, coming from somebody who's out there in government who realizes that he is a public servant. Let's go ahead and go to, I guess, up next, Ann in Wisconsin. Thank you so much for holding. A question for Eustace Mullins.
Yes. Thank you for taking me. I'll get right to it. You've got so much to add here.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me real good?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, thank you. It's been said that the Federal Reserve doesn't want to own all the land in the world. They want to own the mortgages to it. With knowing that, do you believe that the war in Iraq and Afghanistan is to obtain a version of people who are not on MasterCard, who once they obtain the MasterCard status, can then be enslaved to generate more money for the Federal Reserve?
Well, Iraq was invented at the Paris Peace Conference of 1919 under Woodrow Wilson, who also signed the Federal Reserve Act and the law of 1913. So the entire Middle Eastern controversy or situation goes right back to the League of Nations and to Woodrow Wilson.
It sure does.
Do you think it's as much using the people as getting them on MasterCard to generate more usury interest as opposed to oil? Do you believe it's...
Well, yes. These are Muslims, and they outlawed usury and their religion. They have a religious objection to usury.
True, but now that they say that there is no major building built in the world that the Federal Reserve, the world bankers are not aware of or don't have money in, so that once the people start getting highways, cars and highways, the Federal Reserve and the world bankers kick right in there to loan that country the money to generate that new kind of business.
Well, maybe we should talk about the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, which are just two organizations under the Bank of International Settlements, much like the Federal Reserve. They all work together, don't they?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Eustace?
Well, they work through the Bank of International Settlements, BIS, in Switzerland, and that's how they finance all these things.
You know, and one of the problems is, I mean, you go in, you currency speculate, you got these guys like Soros and Buffett. They go in, they wipe out the entire economy. The forces of the globalists are made to bear on a third world country or a good, I guess, target for this are countries in South America that have oil, that have resources such as Argentina or Venezuela. And then you go ahead and you pull the plug, and then they have to borrow money from you with, you know, certain aspects in order to get that money. In other words, you have to organize riots. You have to kill all the labor unions. You have to, you know, take minimum wage down. The price of bread goes up to $100 a loaf. They get the water. And if you default on the loans, of course, all your resources go to the banks. That's how it works.
That's absolutely true. And all this goes back to the fact that these countries don't even exist. There is no Iraq. Or there is no Kuwait. These countries were invented in 1919 by Woodrow Wilson. And the fact is that this is the old Arab Ottoman Empire, which goes back to the 14th century.
Yeah.
And nothing has ever replaced it. And the United States Army is replacing it today. Our boys are fighting in Iraq to preserve the Ottoman Empire.
Well, and it's covert economic colonization. It's covert slavery, folks. And we're falling right into it, unfortunately. Thank you, Ann, for your comments. We're going to go to Artie Wheeler, who we were just talking about, who I have to thank for hooking us up together, Eustace. Artie, welcome to the program. I know you had a few comments for Eustace Mullins.
Well, thank you, Jack, and it's good to hear you, Mr. Mullins, again. What I wanted to make a statement about, you know, the biggest tax of all that anyone pays is a secret tax. It's called inflation. And the fact that the masses do not view inflation as a secret form of taxation, but attribute it to vague and sundry causes which they don't understand, is the reason it's so popular with governments as a secret form of taxation. The Roman Caesars understood it well, and I'm very aware of it because I'm in the tooling and machining industry, and when you realize how more efficient machines are from the time that the Industrial Revolution started in the 1600s, a machine with a worker can produce exponential goods today with the same number of man hours. Therefore, prices on everything you buy should steadily be falling, ultimately down to almost zero. The fact that prices and wages can stay exactly the same year after year means nothing. It can disguise the enormity of the inflation because of the fact that the people are more productive every day, especially when machines are run by computer control, especially machining, milling machines or machines in the plastic industry, for example. And I'd like to have Mr. Mullins comment on the fact that inflation is a secret form of taxation. Thank you. I'm going to hang up.
Thank you, Artie. Go ahead, Eustace.
Oh, inflation is a form of taxation because we do not have a stable monetary system. The Federal Reserve was enacted in 1914 to give us stable prices. That was the whole idea of getting...
Well, and that's what the antagonists say. That's what the devil's advocate would say, is that we need the Federal Reserve, and this is exactly what J.P. Morgan made the case of, and some of these other industrialists, that the Federal Reserve is going to save us. It's going to keep us on a balanced monetary system. It's going to keep us a balance between inflation and growth. But that's all a scam, isn't it, Eustace?
Well, it's all a scam. We've had more bank failures and we've had more depressions since 1914 than we ever have before.
I mean, we had no debt. This government, the United States, had no debt when the Federal Reserve Act was passed in 1913. So again,
that was the problem. We had no debt. The whole economy wanted to function on debt pricing. And that's why they got rid of it.
So. Right. And you made another really good comment also that the, you know, the country's wealth is based on production, which makes it pretty alarming when you see that production has gone way down. We have become a country of consumers consuming other people's production. I mean, that is disastrous.
Well, it is when you start consuming other people's production. In fact, I'm a producer myself. I write books, and yeah. I have them printed, and I have them distributed.
Yeah.
And therefore, I am producing something for the economy. But if you're not producing something, you're going to drag the economy back. You're not going to add anything to the economy.
Yeah, I want people to understand this again. The projected forecasted deficit for this year is now over $500 billion. Do you understand, people out there, that $360 billion or more a year is going just for interest payments on this money we've borrowed from these crooks? And that's a fact.
Well, the banks, I love that because, in fact, Ezra Pound said that wars, he found out in studying World War I, that wars were started to create debt. There was no geographic or any problem in a war except that the bankers wanted to create some debt so they could have some interest.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, they create these wars. These same people, folks, fund both sides. They mechanize and arm both sides. They train both sides. And when you understand that concept, you'll have a new, I think, appreciation for the war, the word peace, I believe. Drew is up in Little Rock, Arkansas. Drew, thank you for patiently holding. You're up with Eustace Mullins.
What a pleasure to talk to the conductor of the freedom movement.
That's pretty much the case.
Mr. Mullins, I wanted, this is the first opportunity I've had to talk to you since 1992, when I, a gentleman by the name of Herman Branton gave me your name and said if I wanted to learn what the truth was to read your book. And, it took me about 2.5 to 3 weeks and I found you on the phone and we corresponded, via letter and, I sent you the money for all of your books and then the process. They've been loaned out to Air Force and Marine personnel over the years, and we all want to thank you for writing those books, the books that are RBN is now going to bring on. And I want to know, do you have any new books in the last few years that I haven't been told about?
Save that, Eustace.
No, but I'm working on a couple of books right
hold
now.
Hold on, everybody. We got to come back. Drew, you're going to hold over. We're here with Eustace Mullins, Jack Blood with you. Stay tuned.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
Welcome back to the program. Jack Blood here with you. My guest today is Eustace Mullins. We're talking about the Federal Reserve, the globalist, and the New World Order in general. I appreciate you all tuning in. We are making Eustace Mullins' books available to the public for the first time in quite a while since he has taken a number of attacks by the globalists. It's made it almost impossible for him to market his books. We have taken up the mantle and are adding them to the RBN store. You can call and get them right now at 800-724-2719. That's right, folks. The phone is working. You can use it. 800-724-2719 for your copy of Secrets of the Federal Reserve, which is a must-have. And if you go to the RBN site here, well, maybe starting tomorrow, we'll have Eustace Mullins' collection of works up there, what is available for you, and you'll be able to purchase those through RBN, make life a little easier for Mr. Mullins. I think it's safe to say that without the work of Eustace Mullins, it's debatable if any of us would even be here, not just doing this work, but being here, period. I think that this type of work, and of course the precedent that Mr. Mullins has set, has certainly given us a foundation in which to build our house on. And my hat's off to you, Eustace. I thank you very much for taking all these bullets for us.
Well, I was pretty sure when I started this work that I would live past the age of 35. And so I've gone almost 50 years beyond that, so I'm pretty lucky all the way around.
Well, and they've tried to discredit you. We're going to go back to Drew here in a second, but they've tried to discredit you. I know that Pat Robertson wrote about you in his book, New World Order, and that in a particular interview, just this is one example, where he was talking about this book on Charlie Rose, a big syndicated talk show host, that they were trying to paint you with a broad brush of anti-Semite.
Well, that is the craziest thing of all, because when I went to New York, in 1952 to live after being fired from the Library of Congress, I was taken in by Jewish people and I was fed almost entirely by Jewish people. Ben Friedman and Henry Klein, some of the great Jewish leaders really took care of me for years.
Well, they use this against all of us and it has some teeth, but as you say and others have said, you know, the globalists, the people who make this money, who put this scam together, they're not, they don't have an allegiance to any religion or race or methodology other than their own agenda.
Well, that's exactly true. Now, in my book, Murder by Injection, the only history of the American, the AMA, I said that I owed the book entirely to three people, Dr. Goldenson and Dr. Mendelsohn and another guy, and they were all Jewish people, all three of them. And I gave credit for those three guys in my book.
Well, I know that, you know, people like David Icke, who's a more contemporary author who's been writing a number of great books for the last several years, myself and others, we certainly get this brand, this label that we're anti-Semites if we, first of all, even mention Israel and the Zionist policies, and secondly, even talk about this stuff. So it's working, unfortunately, at least against the anesthetized American public and the citizens at large.
Well, it's a great scare tactic. You know, David Icke and I, the last time we spoke in Toronto a couple of years ago, we were threatened with deportation by the Canadian government.
Yeah, well, the Bronfmans don't like you guys.
Oh, the Canadian Jewish Congress went berserk. They were doing front page stories in all the Canadian papers.
Yeah.
And one-hour television documentaries denouncing us.
And you got Ernst Zundel up there, who's been taking quite a lot of heat and has been...
Oh, Ernst has had a terrible life, honestly. I feel like I'm lucky compared to Ernst Zundel.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to see what the New World Order is going to be like, folks, if you want to see how socialism works and how this is put into practice, go ahead and go up to Canada or go to England, and you'll see exactly what's in store for you here down the road. And there are certainly better examples, people who are even farther down the path. Well, before we went to break, we had Drew on from Little Rock. He's a great caller on this program. He asked, I think, a great question. Drew, you were asking if Eustace had any new books in the hopper?
Yes, sir. That was my biggest question. You know, I'm privileged to have had his books for over 13 years. And as a former major in the United States Marine Corps, I salute him with full respect and honor for a man that has done something for 50 years and he's still here. Or another, a lot of other men that had of lesser value have passed on. And when I say that Mr. Mullins is the conductor, you and your program and Jack Stadmiller and Frank in the morning all talk about we're talking to the choir. This is the conductor for all of us.
You're exactly right. Well, any new works coming out, Eustace?
Yes, I'm reprinting six of my books that I have to print, and I'm working on reprinting those right now, and I'm doing four other books. So I have ten books will be coming out in the next 6 months.
Nothing slows you down, Eustace. Well, I'm glad we came along here so that we can get these books out to the public at large, and whatever we can do to help you, we're going to. Anything else, Drew?
God bless you, Eustace. Keep up the great work, and I will add to my collection as time puts forth. You keep up the great work, Jack, and God bless you.
And same to you, Drew. You're a great listener to this program. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back with your calls and more.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
We'll be right back. Yeah, the eye atop the pyramid is open and awake, so we need you to get out there and tell your sisters and your brothers and tell fellow people about this great work started by people like Eustace Mullins, a mantle carried on by Bill Cooper and myself and others. And we need your help, folks. We need new listeners and new recruits, new readers of these books. We need to pass along this information to new generations, and we cannot let this die with us, or we'll be responsible. And if you can go ahead and take the question from your grandchildren or your children or their children why you stood by and didn't do anything, then you're, I guess, less concerned than I am that we'll live that long. And that's our responsibility. That is our charge. And we could live a good life and a free life and a fruitful life and obtain higher consciousness while doing these things, folks. We need to spread the message. We need to tell more people. There's still time for your calls, folks. We do have lines open. I know a lot of people are calling and getting a busy signal or whatever signal you get when the lines are jammed. There are some lines open right now. If you want to talk to Eustace Mullins and myself, Jack Blood, 800-313-9443. Before we go back to calls, Eustace, I want to ask you, who owns the stock of the Federal Reserve banks? Is this something that we can buy stocks to?
No, by law, the Federal Reserve stock cannot be bought or sold on the open market. Now, most of it is in institutions. The Rockefeller Foundations have a lot of the original Federal Reserve stock. It's in their vaults. Nobody can touch it.
And let's be very clear, you know, the Internal Revenue Service or the Federal Reserve, are these government agencies?
Well, they're all government agencies, but they're quasi-government agencies. They're government agencies that are the government. That's the problem, the trick of the whole thing.
The big question is, can Congress or can we, the people, abolish the Federal Reserve and default on this massive debt we have?
Well, it's in the Federal Reserve Act, Section 33. Says Congress reserves the right to alter or abolish the Federal Reserve or buy back the Federal Reserve stock at any time. There's no time limit. It can be done next week.
Well,
all you need is a couple of congressmen to do it.
You know, I know that Ron Paul just put through a bill to abolish the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. Of course, nobody wanted any part to do with that, so at least we have... I had Ron Paul on just last week, I believe, or the week before, and he said,
Ron's an old friend of mine.
And he said there was a handful of people there, though, that did support him, but of course that wasn't enough to pass the bill. Go ahead, Eustace.
Well, Ron Paul has supporters, but he is a lone wolf in Congress, just like Congressman Wright Patman and Lewis McFadden. Anybody who goes after the bankers is going to find themselves a lone wolf. The other congressmen all desert him. And they won't support him in anything, and that's the way it's been with every one of them.
And we also know that the press is rather kind to the Federal Reserve. In fact, Mitchell, I'll tell you this, when I was at the Democratic National Convention, I met a number of heavyweight people, and I went right up, had no qualms about introducing myself and telling them about the truth media. I had quite a conversation with Ron Reagan Jr. I also met Bill O'Reilly, and a number of these culprits. But one of the people I didn't introduce myself to because I didn't trust myself to keep my mouth shut and not go on the attack was Andrea Mitchell, who's a mainstay in the mainstream media. She's actually married to Alan Greenspan, chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Well, she's Greenspan's wife, yeah. Well, she is an absolute spokeswoman for the Federal Reserve System since her husband runs the thing, and he's actually just a figurehead.
And does the President of the United States have any power to fire or reappoint the Chairman of the Federal Reserve, or is that all done internally?
That's all done on recommendations of the Presidents of the 12 Federal Reserve Banks around the United States. The President has no say-so whatsoever. He will accept their recommendations for a Chairman of the Federal Reserve System, but that's all he can do.
Well, and I wanted that point to be made rather succinctly that we have no power over the Federal Reserve.
Absolutely
folks.
Not, unless you're a president of a Federal Reserve Bank.
Right, which I don't happen to be, and I don't know if any of my callers or listeners are. I wanted again to mention real quick here, folks, that you can get a copy of this book. This is a must-have for your library. If you're looking at your library and doing your research and you do not have any of Eustace Mullins' books, especially Secrets of the Federal Reserve, well, there's a big gaping hole in that collection. You need to get that, and we are making it available to you here with no effort other than a phone call and $20 at 800-724-2719, 1-800-724-2719. That means that your work, Eustace, will go to help fund our message here as well, so we can all benefit. The listeners will have the information. You'll be able to get some of those books unloaded. And we, of course, here taking a small profit from the proceeds, will put that money back into RBN and grow this message. So it's a win-win-win situation for all of us. 800-724-2719. I expect to see the phones ringing off the hook here any second, Eustace. Let's go to Ann in New Mexico. Ann, thank you so much for your patience and holding today. A question for Eustace Mullins.
Yes. Jack and Eustace, you're both warriors, and it's a real honor to be speaking on this program. A couple of observations and two questions. It's a battle over turf, a spiritual warfare. And the lifeblood of the beast is money. But money now, these Luciferians are becoming more sophisticated. They want to eliminate the paper, like you said, and go into the electronic command and control of the energy of the people. And this is because money is nothing more than stored energy or the production of the people, like you pointed out. Now, do you see the next step is them shifting the population so they'll have control of the energy in real time? That's question number one. And then where does the Bank of Switzerland the hub? And where does the Vatican fit in? Because I'm sure the Vatican is.
That's a good question, Ann.
I hang on because it's a poor reception today?
You can hang on.
To listen.
Put her on hold, Matt, so that you can hear the response to the question. She asked a lot of good questions. I thought the best one is, and we determined that the bank in Switzerland, the Bank of International Settlements, is the hub for all central banks. It is the central bank of the central banks. What connection might all this have to the Vatican?
Well, the Vatican is a principal financial power because in 1824, the House of Rothschild was appointed the sole fiscal agent of the entire Vatican Empire. And that's been going on since 1824. And since 1824, the House of Rothschild has pretty well run the Vatican.
So the globalists or the Rothschild family run the Vatican, or the Vatican is really employing them as agents?
Well, they have to work with the Rothschilds to stay alive because the Rothschilds control all their money.
Do you believe that these bankers, these international bankers and these old money globalists, in effect, have neutralized the Vatican?
Well, that principally is it, that neutralized it. You see, some of these old families that go back to the Roman Empire have some of the biggest mansions in Venice and Italy and Rome and so forth, and therefore... These people have survived, and they're surviving by using their same old techniques of staying close to power, using money as power, and they go sailing right on.
I want to remind people of a quote made at a Bilderberg conference in 1991 by David Rockefeller, or Rockenfelder, his true name. He's a humanist, CFR kingpin, founder of the Trilateral Commission. He's a New World Order godfather. And he said this: "We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time magazines, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subjected to the lights of publicity during these years. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward world government, the supernatural sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national autodetermination practiced in past centuries. These people think that they're doing something good for us." Isn't that right, Eustace?
Well, David Rockefeller sneered at all of the nationalists and the free-thinking people of the world because he said they don't have any money. And that's true. Most of them don't.
Yeah.
And that's a differentiation.
Well, collectively, I guess we do. And collectively, at this point, we've been given the power to be consumers. We can now start voting with our dollars more effectively than ever before, though that might just get them desperate enough to take it to the next level. I know that they'd rather do this in a more covert manner, Eustace, but they're prepared to pull the plug on the whole thing and throw us into another world war at any time. Let's take Dave in, what is that, Wyoming? No. I'm sorry, Rodney was first. Rodney in Texas. Thank you for holding. A question for Eustace Mullins.
Yes, great show as usual. It's an honor to be able to speak with your guest. I'd like to get the spelling of his first name.
Eustace, it's E-U-S-T-A-C-E.
Okay. Now, part of the globalist plan is to get rid of, 80 to 85, 90% of the world's population. And I wanted to know, when do you think they'll pull the plug on us?
Well, I don't think they are going to pull the plug on us because, you see, they're outnumbered. They know that. They can count. They're a very small minority of the world's population.
That's right.
So they have to behave themselves up to a certain point or they'd be wiped out.
But with pestilence, disease, of course, biological attacks, now that these terrorists can do an eventual war all over the planet, they can do a pretty good job cutting the numbers, so to speak, from the bottom of the pyramid.
Well, they can cut the numbers. That's what the Club of Rome has been talking about
right.
for many years. And they don't really want to cut the numbers. They want to reduce them to a more manageable number.
Well, and they've said this many, many times, and Rodney, I know you are an authority on this. You know this to be a fact. I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, the speculation on how far they're going to cut the numbers. As you say, the Club of Rome was an authority on eugenics programs that we saw through Hitler and others. So pretty soon the norm is going to be if you're not a healthy, intelligent, New World Order-serving child, you're not even coming into the world.
Well, that's very possible, yes.
Well, I want to thank you for having such a great guest on, Jack, and you guys keep up the great work.
Hey, thank you for your call, Rodney. As always, great comments. Now we have Dave in Wyoming. Dave, thank you so much for holding. A question for Eustace Mullins.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Dave?
Is that you, Dave?
Yeah.
You're up.
Eustace, appreciate you being on the air. I understood you were tied up.
Yeah.
Your brother had you tied up for a while in a nursing home or something, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, two of my brothers put me in a nursing home, two nursing homes, and I had a heck of a time getting out.
Oh, what I want to ask you, I'll be quick about it, George Bush, did he have any Jewish roots?
I don't know of any Jewish roots, but there are definite roots to early movements and free-thinking movements and so forth back in England.
He's a Frankist, no?
Yeah, he's a Frankist.
Okay, second question, and then I'll let's go. Lawrence of Arabia, what did he know? What didn't he know? How did that all tie in
he
with
knew.
The over now?
He knew everything. In fact, this is why Franklin D. Roosevelt was murdered, because he met King Faisal, and he promised King Faisal that they wouldn't take the Arab lands. And then that's why he had his sudden death.
Okay.
Hey, is that it, Dave? Thank you very
much. Thank you very much.
I like that question about Lawrence of Arabia. Yeah, he knew, and he had to deal with his conscience the entire time, but he went ahead and sold out all of the, as you say, Ottoman Empire, the Turkish people, or the, Arab people over there. And interesting comment that you made earlier, Eustace, that these countries were never really countries.
They never have been countries.
They were just lines on a map, and the pie was somewhat divided until they wanted to restructure the dividing lines.
But still, Woodrow Wilson brought to the Versailles Peace Conference his doctrine of national self-determination, which was total nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's kept everything in chaos ever since.
Yeah, we had a bad time there. Do you think there's one president that we've had in the last, say, 80, 90 years that has been even close to being on our side?
Well, people think that Ronald Reagan was, but Ronald Reagan was a creature of the Hollywood movie producers, and the idea that he was on our side is just a mistake.
Well, he was a deep Mason, way deep in there, also a member of Bohemian Grove. What about Kennedy and Kennedy wanting to get rid of the Federal Reserve? A lot of people talk about that being kind of his death warrant when he...
They think that it was his death warrant, and apparently Kennedy's advisors, he asked them, what could I do to ensure my place in history? And they said, well, the first thing you should do is get the Federal Reserve off the backs of the American people, and then there will be a statue of you in every town in America. And so Kennedy went for that. It sounded great, and it was great. But what did him in.
You think they were setting him up? Because we know his advisors were high-level
roundtable
people.
Yeah, I think it was a setup all the way.
Wow. Bob is up from Kansas. Bob, thank you for holding. A question or comment for Eustace Mullins.
Hello.
You're up, Bob.
Yeah, Houston. I've known about you for a long, long time. First question, real quick, and then I'll hang up. Have you ever heard of a text I guess they passed it out in the college called, in the 1800s, called Whither Are We Drifting as a Nation?
No, I haven't heard of that.
It names the names. It talks over the procedures. It goes very much in depth about how the industrials stole our land and what the big money power was doing during and after Lincoln. And it's very interesting. I found that I read that in grade school.
Oh,
I have it here at home from an old person that died and gave it to me.
Oh, it's got to be reprinted. That should, the people should know about that.
It's very interesting. Secondly, do you have a comic book version of your literature for these brain-dead oxygen thieves out here?
No, people have asked me to do that for years, but I've never got around to doing it.
Or a video game.
I'm afraid they're not smart enough to understand what you're trying to say, because when I try to explain Khazars and British Israelism and how they controlled Hitler and Stalin, and how the seedbed of it's in London, the United States, for the most part, everybody just looks at me like they just can't get their minds around it.
Well, it's such a foreign concept that their minds can't comprehend it. That's the problem.
I mean, the Da Vinci Code recently came out and got lot of kudos from the mainstream media. They couldn't give it enough airtime.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of what that says, Eustace, is that the Sumars and the Babylonians and all of this great blood lineage, including that of Jesus Christ himself, went right into the European monarchs. And they
certainly did.
And literally, the queen sits with some type of, what does she have underneath her seat? Something that links her to Jesus on a blood level?
There's a connection.
I mean,
she's related to those families in Italy and so forth.
I mean, this is what they're trying to perpetuate, though, and this is what they want us to believe, is that they themselves are the true chosen people, the true Jewish race, and this is where they get their divine right to rule bit from, folks. They think they have a divine right to rule. What do you think? We have a couple of more minutes left in the show. We'll go to Allen in Texas and try to squeeze in whoever we can. We are privileged to be here today with Eustace Mullins. I'm Jack Blood. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
And now, back to Deadline Live with your narrator, Jack Blood.
And so, in my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it, speech to the nation. I asked Americans to give 4,000 years, 4,000 hours over the rest of your life of service to America. That's what I asked. I said, 4,000 hours.
Defenders of the flag. Oh, folks, I mean, this is all our own fault. We let this happen. What are we going to do about it? That'll be subject for the next interview we have with Eustace Mullins, which I hope, Eustace, this is the beginning of a long relationship with you and RBN here. I wanted to make this quote here before we have Alan up in Texas to have the last word from the listeners. Well, there's two quotes I want to read. One is by James Garfield, former U.S. president. He said, whoever controls the volume of money in our country is, underlined, absolute master of all industry and commerce. And he obviously was provoked enough to make that. And then Henry Ford said this, it is well enough that the people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system, for if they did, I would believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. Do you believe that, Eustace?
Oh, yes. Well, Henry Ford said that because of his own experience. You know, they tried to steal the Ford Motor Company from him.
Yeah.
And the bankers told him they could recapitalize it for him, but they would take control. And so he had firsthand experience of how they operate.
But this is what we're talking about. If we can convince 260 million Americans today who the Federal Reserve is and how our banking and monetary system works, they'd be out in the streets screaming for blood by the morning.
Oh, absolutely, because they're criminals. I have told my lecturers, I've told my audiences for 50 years that the Federal Reserve System is a criminal syndicate.
You know, folks, if you want to get involved here today, I've made it really easy for you to do something. If you go to jackblood.com, to the headline news page, and you get Dear Attention Public Servants, you will have a letter that authorizes the knowledge to go out to these public servants so that they now know and are culpable for this scam being perpetuated on the American people and the people of the world. I suggest you download that letter, sign it, and send it to all your public servants to make them, again, responsible for the information. At least then they can say, they can't say, that they didn't know. Alan in Texas, you got the last word real quick.
Okay, you segued right into my question. To bring up that name again, Lyndon LaRouche said at one time, once these guys are exposed, that they will only be found hiding in the dark places for fear of us millions who are after them. Where, and it's good to have access to such a fountain of wisdom and knowledge today, where do you see this going? Do you see an end to this system? Do you see...
Well, I do indeed. In fact, it's been long delayed. When they wrote the Federal Reserve System and enacted it in 1914, I think they only expected it would last about 25 years. In other words, the Federal Reserve System would have been gone by 1939.
And in your meditations, how have you envisioned the end of this to appear in
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much. Sum it up for us.
Well, I see the end as the glory of America. I've told my audiences for 50 years that the American history is only beginning.
Folks,
we haven't fulfilled our responsibilities as republics since 1787, and therefore the American people have the greatest future of the world waiting for them.
Eustace, thank you so much for joining us. Call 800-724-2719, 800-724-2719 to get a hold of these fabulous books. Eustace Mullins, we'll have you on again real soon. Thank you so much for joining us. John Statmiller of the National Intel Report coming up here in seconds on Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned. I will be back tomorrow with special guests. Until then, I'm Jack Blood saying be bold and great things will come to you.